You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Hello, welcome to the Daily Nationalist. This is Matthew Raphael Johnson, and today is the 29th of August of 2024. The way we normally do these things is we use a few articles of interest to us back when Sven was here, and we would discuss some of the ideas brought up there. And I'm going to do that again, as I always do, today with one of my favorite authors, Paul Craig Roberts. My favorite political authors. Many of you know he was the assistant secretary of the Treasury under Ronald Reagan, and now has become a nationalist of a sort. And he is going through a lot of what many of us, he's older than me, obviously, and many of you, and so he has seen much more. And one of the things he's seen is that the interest in ideas and debate has long since been killed. And he says that ideas have been replaced by agendas. And I think by that he means ideologies. Ideologies are these secular marks leading people to salvation. And that explains the, call the managed democracy, as the State Department used to say back in the Clinton administration. And the Clinton administration, in many ways, was a watershed. Despite Bill running as a more or less conservative Democrat, he promoted agendas that have only been filled out as the years have gone on. I've mentioned the 1960 election, and he actually does this again here, that was probably the last time you had substantial, knowledgeable people debating with a basic consensus on what the goals were. The only thing that they debated, the one long debate on domestic policy and the other one on foreign policy, which is on YouTube, both of them, the consensus was very clear how to get there. The means were subjects of debate. And even then, Nixon was cheated out of that election, as close as it was. But at least there, you had substantial ideas. There were closer to what a statesman would be then, and I think Nixon was really the last statesman in any kind of an office. And so they came up with that silly Watergate thing, which didn't make any sense under the circumstances. But candidates at least had were supposed to have some kind of an idea, principle, not an agenda. It seems today, and we're talking about the election, of course, I don't really deal with this too much, but it's Paul Craig Roberts' opinion, and to a great extent my own, and we say this in a guarded way, that the regime is going to install Kamala Harris as their administrator. Right now, very few people know anything about Harris's agenda. I know in foreign policy, she's identical to what's going on right now. She does have Jewish background, but as far as domestic stuff goes, I mean, she's an unpopular woman. Unpopular in her own party, which has been the case for three straight presidential elections now. Democrats have put up fairly unpopular people. But what they're running with now is that Trump is a dictator that will destroy democracy. Which, as we all know, what I'm going to say here, this is purely projection. Because the current regime has made it a point to turn law into a weapon against political candidates. These ridiculous felony indictments and convictions that are blatant election interference. They would never be prosecuted under any other circumstance. Department of Justice, the Democratic Attorney General of New York, is clear is clear election interference. And the projection is that the claim is that he interfered in an election by the way he reported a business expense. And I think it's in a few weeks that he's going to be sentenced. So this isn't just mudslinging. That's the point. This is third world level stuff. It's about controlling the outcome of the election. And of course, there, the same people, and they've said this the last two times, that unless their people won, they're not going to accept the outcome of the election. So either way, we're talking about a crisis in November. Now, Roberts goes on to talk about his scholarly publications. He does have a PhD in economics. But there was an interest in ideas back when he published, really the 60s and 70s, less so when I started 25, 30 years ago. But scholarly journals today have no connection to ideas. It's about agendas. It's about research grants. Several years ago, he mentions Ron Unz, who cataloged the past issues of defunct, but once fairly successful publications, where you actually had real debate going on. But he makes the claim, as I do, that it was during the Clinton era that ideas began losing ground to agendas. And in academia, of course, this was where it truly began. And by agendas, we're talking about power. The importance of truth declines as agendas get promoted, rather than any concern with the truth. Truth is irrelevant. People are going to prison saying true things, and it's precisely why they're going to prison. CIA, FBI, State Department, AIPAC sponsors these fact-checkers. Fact-checkers, which didn't exist prior to the 2016 election, which was supposed to be rigged in Hillary's favor, but she couldn't even win a rigged election. Of course, they weren't going to make that mistake 4 years later. Corporations and all the leftists that they support are there to create these, 2016 vintage fact checkers, which are designed to protect them from the truth of the matter. The Constitution is a document of the past, clearly. The easiest way, and I think we all know this, to get into trouble today in the Western world is to tell the truth. Scott Ritter, some of you may know, I've quoted him thousands of times in the past. His house was ransacked by the FBI. He was arrested, of course, Trump, Tulsi Gabbard, many others. He also mentions that the New England Journal of Medicine and the Lancet, their editorial staff say they have no confidence in the articles they publish. And they, I don't know where they come up with it, but the number 70% of these medical articles were published with Big Pharma research grants. Once money entered these kind of things, once the Supreme Court said that there can be no limitations on money, there was no accountability anymore. Now, of course, it's just much easier to steal elections, violating every safeguard that's intended to protect legitimate election outcomes, or they simply bus in illegals. So much of people, the people in power, are very dependent on corruption, to the extent that they're calling on the murder of a presidential candidate. And, I remember in 2016, if you read, the very few people who bothered to read Trump's agenda, it wasn't all that. There was nothing radical about it, nothing compared with what his opposition was doing. But this has much in common with the fall of the Soviet Union as anything else. Gorbachev, at least according to Paul Craig Roberts, and I want to take him seriously here, talks about Gorbachev's arrest of the hardliners who didn't like his perestroika. The only good that the USSR did, and I challenge this pretty substantially, but this was certainly the case in the 70s and early 80s, is that it did put a break on unilateralism. But once the 90s started, everything changed. And once Clinton was brought in 92, agendas became more important than truths. I'm one of the people who speak out about these unfolding events. Scott Ritter is another. Paul Craig Roberts is another. And the last thing in the universe, remember, this started with the Holocaust. The last thing in the world they want is debate, because they tend to lose. Remember, academics and journalists are very intellectually soft. because they don't have to face anything. They don't have to face their opposition whatsoever. Only a lie needs state protection in the modern sense of the concept of state. It used to be that nuclear war was considered a bad thing, but the minute the enemy became Russia, today's Russia or today's China, all of a sudden it now you have no anti-nuke movement. You have no peace movement of any substance anyway. For Washington, and I've said this before, and I'm going to quote him directly here, war is now more important than survival. They project and deflect. They create these concocted enemies. And that giving in to these inventions of their own mind is more dangerous than even the nuclear war is. And he also makes the point very clearly, and I've said this before, that any direct confrontation with Russia or China or both, which did not happen during the so-called Cold War, means the West's own termination. Americans have tolerated this endless accusation, the Russian agent thing, the Russian meddling thing, precisely as the West was doing this everywhere. Ritter was taken off an airliner, investigated. Whether or not people actually believe this crap or not is another matter. The neocons actually still claim to have some semblance of connection to conservatism at all. And this is independent of the enormous debt instability. So as long as U.S. Treasury debt serves as a reserve of central banks, that is okay. That's what got us through the so-called Cold War era. But that's not the case anymore. You're talking about a weak economy, sanctions, stealing assets in the Russian case. This is why there's no trust in U.S. Treasury debt. Declining use of the dollar means the declining dollar. The U.S. is producing in other currencies in other parts of the world. Offshoring has tremendous consequences that few people have bothered to put into action over the last 30, 40 years. America's border crisis is a part of replacing us. It's a part of outvoting us, outgunning us, outmuscling us. What's the official account? An understated official account, 3.6 million immigrant invaders every year, overwhelming cities, the deceit about COVID vaccines, banning effective treatments, ivermectin, HCQ, now increasing distrust of the medical establishment. The regime only recognizes force. That's what the state is. It's a geographical entity held together only by force and the use of ethnic divisions. There's no accountability at any level. The regime, as I've defined it over the years, is the only thing that rules. Now, if you remember 2020, Trump campaigned all over the place, massive audiences. Off-road stores sprung up. I just saw my first one in this election cycle today. The enthusiasm was everywhere, palpable. These huge rallies and stadiums, one after another, are still going on. Biden did absolutely nothing 4 years ago. He had no rallies. What little he had, no one showed up for. Whenever he said anything, if YouTube picked it up, the dislikes were 10 times the number of the likes, which is why they got rid of the dislike button on YouTube. And they began purging yet again. They did it in 2016. They did it again in 2020, purging all social media accounts of those supporting him. Trump got more votes in 2020 than he got in 2016, and yet somehow Biden got more votes than any president in history. In swing states, vote counting was stopped in the middle of the night. Truckloads of boxes arrived, sometimes from out of state, but only in swing states and in parts of cities that were controlled by the Democratic Party, votes almost exclusively for Biden. And then once they were counted over hours, sometimes days, the lead disappeared. And I think the same is going to happen in November. Yes, the enthusiasm for Trump is still very high. There's still a tremendous amount of energy. Kamala couldn't possibly engage a turnout like that. Of course, Trump is going to win in reality, but not as far as the regime is concerned. She went from an absolute nobody to overnight, the media's candidate, this formidable force, taking the lead in swing states. I learned about fake polls during the Clinton era. They're manipulating poll results, making it seem that Kamala is the winner, or at least even with Trump. So when the scam comes in, it won't be all that surprising. Yet very few people know what she stands for. Americans certainly don't want open borders, endless wars, the normalization of perversion, and the rest of it. And yet she's going to be somehow elected. Biden, fairly unpopular man, conservative Democrat his whole life, refusing to campaign, is suddenly elected by huge numbers, despite the fact that Trump saw his share of the vote go up, especially in swing states, dominating the election until middle of the night. Last month, not even the Democrats wanted Kamala Harris. And now she's considered one of the strongest candidates in American political history. You have Republican fundraisers who are very opportunistic, saying that Trump might lose because Democrats are making more money. The Democrats are always going to make more money. That plays into the agenda that there is a chance here. To claim that the election is a toss-up right now is to act absurdly. That's why it's going to be stolen. American people, American population, there's no American people as such, but they accepted 20 and 22, the off year. Both stolen elections, the same thing, they'll do the same now. There won't be any warfare. If they accepted the bailouts in 2008, 2009, the endless warfare, they accepted the stolen election and then being condemned as violent insurrectionists, as they financed actual violent insurrectionists all over the place. If they tolerate that, there's nothing that they won't tolerate. As Robert says, the Supreme Court doesn't have an army, so taking away the guns of the average law-abiding American will be very easy. If Americans won't resist these scam elections, they're not going to resist anything else. The riots in the UK give some sense of stability and optimism that it just takes, like the murder over there of the children. And it wasn't just the murder, it was that the press was going to cover it up. And the police were a part of it. That's what caused the triggered the riot. Anything like that can happen. Bringing up the Soviet Union is worthwhile because of how it happened very quickly and how small events in the butterfly effect, how small events can snowball into something humongous. But the economy, of course, is a part of any presidential election, despite the fact that politicians have very little to do with economics. The regime continuously lies about its own economic performance. You have to go to sites like Shadow Statistics to get any kind of, not just the proper numbers, but the proper means whereby they reach those numbers. They talked about this 818,000 new jobs from March 23 to March of 24. Now, of course, these are not jobs worthwhile. These are not anything in manufacturing. These are not high-end jobs. They are low-paid service jobs. And now, the same U.S. Department of Labor and the Bureau of Labor Statistics now abandons these, saying that they didn't exist at all and that they overestimated so-called economic growth. Most of the good jobs have long since been offshored or outsourced. They also explain in depth why the inflation numbers are totally fraudulent. Shadow Statistics even uses the methods of various generations. So if they wanted to calculate the inflation rate using the methods used in 1980, it would be, you know, three times as high as it is now. So they lied about strong employment growth. They actually believed and tried to put the idea out there that inflation was because of this strong employment growth, keeping interest rates high. Well, many of us know, and I've said this before, he said it, many others have said it, inflation is based on the COVID lockdowns. There's been no real recovery from 2008. Let alone 2020. COVID destroyed businesses' supply chains, and that's why prices went up. Not because of any inflation, but because of shortages. But truth doesn't make any difference. But shortages can't be rectified by high interest rates or anything else for that matter. High interest rates just raise the cost of production. And they contribute to inflation when the medium and small sectors are completely destroyed. And of course, the lockdown has disrupted their supply chains. High interest rates, but the last thing that's going to help something like that. Now that 818,000 jobs, it's simply been deleted. That was the excuse for high interest rates. So now that they've deleted it, they're talking about liquidity. That is to say, lower interest rates. The Fed says it's time for the Fed policy to adjust. As Powell stated in the Atlanta, Federal Reserve Bank President Bostic announced interest rate cuts. Therefore, you see the stock market going up. Not because the economy is in decent shape, but because any injection of liquidity makes even further lowering of interest rates possible. It's liquidity, not any kind of performance, that drives the stock market. Liquidity, that is to say, the cheaper availability of cash. This is where money ends up going into stocks and real estate. The main result of any kind of Federal Reserve liquidity is driving up stock prices and home prices, which is great for people who own these assets, but non-homeowners are priced out of the market. And certainly, house prices rise faster than service sector incomes. I'm going to quote Paul Craig Roberts directly here. Policymakers, principally the Federal Reserve and the Jews on Wall Street, who imposed offshoring of manufacturing jobs, have destroyed the ladders of upward mobility in the U.S. economy. Small businesses and manufacturing jobs. While the ladders that permitted people to rise were destroyed, the Democrats' open borders policy imports yearly a minimum of 3.6 million illegal immigrant invaders whose job prospects do not extend beyond the chicken and cattle slaughterhouses, and these jobs will disappear when we are restricted to a diet of bugs. The Democrats' DEI policy tries to elevate them, but there just aren't as many that speak English and are sufficiently educated to be cabinet secretaries and CEOs of Fortune 500 corporations. This is a prescription for a third world economy, not a superpower. If you try to find the American economy, it's not present. It has been moved to China or other parts of Asia. Years ago, I explained how to get it back, and no one paid the slightest attention. I want to call to mind here, he mentions the Jews. This, I think, is the first time he's ever mentioned the Jews on Wall Street. In other words, he's taken that step past the Rubicon. I remember when I did it, when E. Michael Jones did it. It's a big deal. And having a man of his stature talk about them and have it just kind of thrown out there like this, this is very important. Nevertheless, without these type of manufacturing jobs, that which was offshored, a disciplined workforce is nowhere to be found. Supply chains, things like, you know, for local machine shops, disappear for lack of customers. Once the ability to produce is lost and sent elsewhere for the sake of short-term profits, the country becomes third world. But this is old news. The actual third world, of course, is a different story. They get manufactured, they even get our service jobs. It's not of their making. They simply took advantage of the ignorance of the regime, of American manufacturers. Now, the youth only know what they've grown up with. They only know what they have access to. There was a time when things were far better, when the Constitution wasn't immediately considered a racist document as a barrier towards diversity, equity, or inclusion. And the only thing that matters now is removing white heterosexual males from any positions of power or esteem. So the regime will start talking about employment growth yet again, because the increase in liquidity, the lowering of rates, is going to push the stock market up, which in some people's minds is still synonymous with a healthy economy. It's no such thing. Now, if some of these news reports are correct, the connection between this and the election, that even among swing states, even challenging election outcomes is considered illegal, or at least the regime wants you to believe it is. In 2020, Kamala Harris was a part of the primary system, and she was immediately eliminated. She had zero support from anybody. And even as a vice president, she's been almost completely invisible. And yet today, you're told, and I'm told, that this woman is leading Trump despite the fact that Donald Trump has these massive rallies, despite the purges in social media, despite the ridiculous political prosecutions. Yes, of course, polls are rigged, and they're rigged by manipulating the demographics, which places like CNN will use. Just Google Kamala Harris and Google Donald Trump and see what results you get. Polls are rigged by overstressing or overweighting Democrats in the polled population. The point is, if you create even a slight expectation or a possible expectation of a Kamala victory, that's how you steal an election. It seems somewhat plausible. It's not possible to steal an election if it's completely imbalanced, if one candidate is very popular, the other is very unpopular. I said 4 years ago that even amongst non-white voters, Donald Trump did much better than Republicans in the past. So how did, given what we said about the economy, Kamala Harris go from zero support in the population, let alone Democrats, zero support among Democrats, to this domineering presidential candidate? Well, there's no primary, we know that. There's been no debates. She certainly has no capability of winning one. She represents everything but white America. She represents anything but sexual morality, peace, or law. She represents agendas and ideologies over what you might call the constitution of the founding generation. Now, the media has, in Paul Craig Roberts' estimation, and mine as well, has made it clear that the election will be stolen. You wouldn't have to rig polls that don't make any sense under the circumstances, and ridiculously biased news coverage if that wasn't the case. The public is being primed to accept stolen elections. And of course, Republicans have very little to say about it. Because if Donald Trump were ever to say anything that this is going to be rigged, what the media will then say is that he's already admitted defeat. And he then will try to steal the election for himself. So he can't be the one to raise the issue. The theft has to be raised, not by Trump himself, but by governors, senators, representatives at the local and state and federal levels. Any place where this kind of debate is even plausible. But are they as incapable of fighting? Have they ever done it before? Would they fight even if they were capable of it? Are they willing to say that everything that they were raised with in terms of the sanctity of American democracy is now a complete fraud and a joke? Are they willing to suffer under the possibility of getting swatted, as they say, and everything that that implies? What's going to happen when Americans are disarmed and legions of immigrant invaders will be sent to throw you out of your house? And this is what Roberts has to say to your typical Republican voter. Your unrealized capital gains, which you were relying on for your retirement, will be taxed. You will have to sell retirement funds in order to pay it. When the market falls, you will not be compensated for the disappeared capital gains that you pay taxes on. You will lose all control over your children, who will be groomed in public schools for pedophiles and gender change. Not too far into this process of transformation to a diverse, equitable, and inclusive society, white people, as in the camp of the saints which we are now living, will not be permitted to marry or to procreate. Can you imagine being a white person at the DNC? Can you imagine being at that level of ignorance, supporting their own elimination? That's the very nature of virtue signaling. That's the origin of it. The inability of white Americans to recognize the danger that they're in, to defeat themselves. But if Republicans won't say anything, especially about an election fraud that has led to their defeat, with the border wide open. You know, I had to read about critical race theory in the 90s in grad school, but now it's policy. It's considered normal. Transgender ideologues are gaining parental authority over kids. That agenda being 100% Jewish, by the way. What do you do? This is why, to a great extent, I've put so much faith in the Russian Federation and the multilateralism of the Eurasianist agenda, the nationalist agenda in general. Why I'm writing on this the Chinese National Socialist response to the West being just another word for liberalism, the West has nothing with which to fight. So they need to use proxies, and they're running out of those. What the Russians will end up destroying is nothing other than a Sodom and Gomorrah, the Tower of Babel. Thank you, everyone, for listening. I'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.